to our second day in this 7-day course, Journey of Self-Discovery. We hope that yesterday's session was easily understandable to everybody. From today we will begin discussing the various subjects that are covered in the Bhagavad Gita. Yesterday we did cover some of those subjects, but as an introduction. And today's topic is also very important. On the second day we will be talking about does God exist or not? And if so, then who is this God? It's a very, very important question today. In the early days, in the bygone ages, most people had firm belief in God. They had firm belief in godly way of life, in godly culture. But nowadays, the world has become very, very materialistic. Atheistic philosophies have always been there in human society, but never as much as it is prevalent today in the world. It is considered quite fashionable and quite modern to be atheistic, to deny anything religious, and people think that it is very unscientific, it is just illogical, irrational. So in this way there are many wrong conceptions that people have. The ordinary man on the street becomes influenced by all these wrong ideas. And even people who are brought up in very devotional families with spiritual culture, they also start accepting these wrong philosophies of life. So therefore it is very necessary to discuss, first of all, what the atheistic people say. What are the arguments they put forward? And then we can understand how to refute them and how to establish the idea that God exists on a very sound footing. So let us first discuss some of the common arguments that people put forward. Of course, nowadays everything is being ruled by science. Science is almighty. So whatever the scientists say, modern science says, everyone follows. So science, as we have seen yesterday, is based upon Pratyaksha Pramana and Anumana Pramana. They have no faith in God, in scripture. And therefore, because their ideology rests upon Pratyaksha Pramana, or what the senses can perceive, so they always ask the question, if God exists, what is the proof? Can you show me God? Can we test God in our laboratories? Can he be verified experimentally? If not, then they do not feel the need to believe in God. If you don't see him, then why believe in him? This is like the attitude of Dr. Frog. We'll tell you a small story. Once upon a time, there was a frog. He was living in a well. He had been born in that well, and all his life he had lived in that well. Suddenly one day, another frog came to visit him. This frog had been brought up and he had also lived for many years near the sea. So when the first frog heard that the second frog lived near the sea where there is lot of water, the first frog asked the second frog, "Oh, what is this sea? Do you have much water in the sea?" He said, "Yes, lot of water." So the first frog had no experience of anything beyond the well. So he said, "Is it as big as my well?" So the second frog said, it's much bigger than that. How much bigger? Twice as much? No, much bigger. Well, how much? 5 times? 10 times? 20 times? Well, it can't be bigger than that, surely. So in this way, the second frog was unable to make him understand how big the sea really is. Because the first frog, his experience was so limited, and he was seeing and trying to analyze everything from his limited experience. So today, those who are trying to deny the existence of God, even though they may appear to be very learned from a material point of view, they are like this Dr. Frog. They are trying to understand reality in terms of what our senses can perceive. They forget that our senses are very limited and they are full of defects, as we saw yesterday. Why should we simply base our understanding of this whole creation simply upon what our senses dictate to us? One should not be like Dr. Frog. One should open one's eyes, one's spiritual eyes, and hear higher wisdom. The second atheistic argument that people put forward is that the concept of God was put forward to explain phenomena in nature. If there is an earthquake, well, God is angry, or something like that. So they say, well, now for every phenomenon in nature, we have a scientific explanation. Therefore, there is no need for bringing in the concept of God anymore. So God has become an old-fashioned idea now. No need for him anymore. So this is the second idea that they put forward. They do not realize that belief in God is not some sentimental thing, but it is a very scientific thing also. But it is a different kind of science. The third kind of argument that they put forward is, if God really exists, then why is there so much suffering in this world? Is God so cruel that he would like to see his children suffering? And if he is indeed cruel, then what kind of God is he? And if he is not cruel, that means he is a helpless God. That means he is a weak God. He cannot change or help his children. Therefore, they think that God cannot exist because suffering exists in this world. And finally, another argument they put forward is that, well, God is there just to introduce some kind of morality in our society. The family unit is the basic unit for society, and therefore everything must go nicely there. So if people live according to religious principles, then there will be some morality and stability in the society. Actually, God does not exist, but just in order to make people behave themselves and not do anything immoral, they have brought in the concept of God. But factually, it is not so. There is a great need now to introduce the philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is not some sentimental propaganda of some class of people. It is the highest philosophy ever known to man. The Bhagavad Gita gives us the perfect understanding of God. It is a song of God Himself. So in this atheistic environment, where havoc is being caused by all these false ideas, there is a great need now to spread and understand the philosophy of Bhagavad Gita and to establish the science of God consciousness on a very scientific, rational and logical footing. Perhaps this kind of approach may not have been necessary about 30, 40 or 50 years ago. But you may have noticed that yesterday and to some extent today also, there is so much talk of science and everything. The reason is because the mentality of people in the modern age has been colored by the educational system of the modern times. And therefore there is need to make reference to such topics so that we can see from the point of view of the Bhagavad Gita how the modern educational system is actually making our students atheistic. It is making our students cultureless. So let us try to understand very, very clearly, rationally, logically, why we should accept or why we should believe that God exists. Of course, I am sure that all of you present here already accept that God exists. Otherwise, probably you would not have come here today. So you may think, well, I already believe God is existing, so why should I then sit and listen to all this now? The answer is, even though we may have some belief that God exists, but that belief or that faith may not be very strong. Secondly, we may not have very solid ground to believe in God. We just have some intuitive faith. And thirdly, if we understand the existence of God on a very logical and scientific basis, then we can convince others also. We can speak to those whom we know, our friends, our relatives, and convince them of why they must accept that God exists. So let us see all these arguments one by one now. First and foremost, creation implies creator. This world is sometimes called the creation. Now, whenever we use the word creation, automatically the word creator has to come. How can something be created if there is no creator? Do we have any experience of anything like that? Every time you see a garden, you think that there is some gardener behind it. Every time you see a clock, you understand there is a clockmaker behind it. So look around at nature. It is such a beautiful thing. Who has made such wonderful phenomena like these wonderful trees, the rainbow, the blue sky, the sea? Look at the gifts of nature around. Does it seem that all these things have come by themselves? Does it seem rational or logical that things have come out of nothing? Look at this machine, very intricate. This is a design of a very complicated machine. Now, can this come by chance? Do you think that when this machine is existing with its complicated design, should there be a designer behind it? Of course, you will say, definitely there is a design. And behind the design, there is a designer. Just look at the organization and craftsmanship that we see around in nature. Just imagine the wonderful phenomenon of one seed, very, very tiny. So tiny, it can many hundreds of seeds can fit into your palm of your hand. And each of those seeds can create a huge tree. So that tree is residing within the seed. Just look at the artistry in the creation around us. The other day, I read in the papers that one painting by some famous artist, this painting was made almost 60 or 70 years ago, maybe more. It sold for an equivalent of rupees 45 crores. And when I saw a picture of that painting, I was very much shocked. I did not find anything that is so remarkable that somebody should pay 45 crores for it. Today, if one big well-known artist paints one flower, one rose like this, or any kind of flower, it will sell for crores of rupees. But people will not even look at a real flower. They want the imitation thing. If you are willing to pay crores of rupees for the painting of one flower, how much more talented, intelligent must be the person who has made the real rose? Should we not think about this? If a painting, behind this painting there is such talent and intelligence, what kind of talent and intelligence must be there behind not one flower, but millions and millions of wonderful flowers of different kinds, each with its unique flavor, design, shape, size, and qualities and colors. Look at how even the ordinary spider creates its web. Such a technology. He has never been to engineering college. But he creates this web and then winds it back within himself. Look at the social organization amongst the honeybees. Very complex, very organized, structured. So when we see such structured things, when there is organization, do we not think that there is some superb organizer behind it? How can there be organization without an organizer? In other words, everything in this world that we see around us is organized. Therefore, there must be some very extraordinary organizer. Look at one simple organ of the body, the eye. The eye is so extremely complex. Those of you who are in the medical line will know more than the rest of us. How even one organ is so extremely complicated that even modern science cannot fully understand. What to speak of one organ? Even one cell of the body is so complicated. The way it functions, it is so complex, far more complex than even a great computer. How is it functioning? Such a meticulous placement of the different components of the cell, and all these cells working together in such harmony collectively to make one organ. And then all these different organs working together in harmony to make one body who acts in a very coordinated way. All this is happening without some creator behind it? Does it not sound very far-fetched? See here another example of a machine. And lo and behold, something is coming out of it. I will tell you a small story. You have all heard of the great scientist Isaac Newton. Newton had made a model of the solar system. Of course, that model was not as complex as this machine, but something like it. And when an atheistic scientist friend of his came there, he saw this wonderful model whereby, just by turning a crankshaft, all the planets which were connected would move around the sun. It simulated the whole solar system. The scientist friend of Newton was very much impressed by this. And he congratulated Newton and asked him, "Oh, you have really done a good job. Did you do it yourself or did you get the help of some professional people?" So Newton wanted to teach him a lesson. So he said, "Actually, neither did I make it, nor any other professional has made it. It just came about by chance. In the morning when I came into my room, I suddenly found this here. Last night I had left some spare parts. And in the morning when I came, suddenly I found this wonderful model here." Naturally, his friend did not believe him. Who would believe such a thing? And when he refused to believe, then Newton reprimanded his friend. And he said, "My dear friend, you refuse to believe that this small little model in front of you has come about by itself, and yet you refuse to accept that the entire creation in all its vastness, in all its complexity, of which this is only a small model here on my table, you believe that that has no creator? Is it not highly illogical?" The friend, of course, had no answer. In this way, we see that just by looking at the creation around us, immediately we can understand that there must be a creator. Without that, how can such wonderful things happen all around us? The second point, second proof, the existence of laws in the universe implies that there is a lawmaker. Can laws exist without a lawmaker? Even an ordinary traffic signal, is it not common sense to understand that somebody has made this rule that green means go, red means stop, and there is some entity, the police force, which is there to implement this, to enforce it? Can laws be just happening by themselves without anybody making these laws? Can the laws just function by themselves without anybody enforcing them or implementing them? If we cannot accept it even for an ordinary traffic signal, then how much more so for the beautiful, harmonious laws of nature all around us? All of you have studied basic science in school. You know there are laws of physics, chemistry, biology, so many laws are there. So who has made these laws? Have these laws come about by themselves? There are laws that govern the atom and even the phenomena going on within the atom. And right up to the cell, the organ, the living entity, the planet, the solar system, right up to the entire universe. From the smallest micro level to the largest macro level, there are laws operating. And they are operating perfectly. We never see the law of gravity failing. Have you seen that sometimes when you drop something, instead of going down, it starts going up? It never fails. The laws are perfectly operating. So who is making such laws? Scientists, what have they done? They have only discovered that such laws exist. Even then, they have not discovered all the laws. They are discovering just a few laws. But the main question is, who has made these laws? Is it sufficient to just discover that these laws are existing? But the most important question will be that these laws are so wonderful that we have spent our whole life trying to understand it and to discover it. How much more wonderful and intelligent must be the person who has made such perfect laws and who is also enforcing such laws without fail? It never fails. So by looking at all the laws around us in nature, we can understand that there is a lawmaker, there is a God. The third proof, logically. These are a set of chanting beads on which we chant the name of God. When you look at these beads, you are not able to see what kind of string is there within these beads. But nevertheless, you know that there is a string. Because if the string was not there, what would have happened? The beads would not have remained in such a nice way. They would have scattered here and there. So similarly, although you do not clearly see the string, but you understand that the string is there by just looking at the beads and the way they are structured and strung together. In the same way, in this universe, everything is going on in a nice structured way. The planets are moving in their orbits perfectly. Do you find signals in outer space saying, keep to your lane? Do you find stars and planets, they are forgetting what is their orbit, their road, and they crash into each other? Or that their orbits have gone wrong? They are going around in their orbits in perfect formation. Here, even though there are so many laws, so many policemen, so many traffic signs, still we find cars will crash with each other. People will go into the wrong lane. So many traffic violations are there. But in God's universe, just see how wonderfully everything is moving in the right lanes. So who is holding all these planets together in the right orbit? Why is it that these planets don't fall down? How is it that they are still floating in the space? Yes, we may give explanations, gravity and so on. But who has made it? Who is holding it up? That is the important question. We see here, that all the planets are floating there practically like a swab of cotton. That is so light, it is moving around effortlessly. God is making all the galaxies, the solar systems, the planets move in such a wonderful way. And the traffic control mechanism of God is perfect. Our RTO authorities could learn from this many wonderful lessons. So naturally then, we can understand that there is a God who is controlling the motion of the planets, the motion of the stars, the galaxies, the whole universe itself. He has created a perfect traffic management system within the universe. So although we do not see God, but just by looking at the way the planets are moving, the galaxies are moving, etc., we can understand that God exists. Just as we can understand that the thread exists, even though we cannot see it in that set of chanting beads. Here, you see, there is a lump of mud, of dust. It is there together now, because it is held in the palm or the fist of one's hand. The moment this person who is holding this dust or the mud, he leaves it, it will fall to the ground. In the same way, Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita, Gam avishya bhutani dharayami aham ojasa. He says, all the planets, my dear Arjuna, are floating in outer space because they are sustained there, they are held up there by my ojas shakti, by my extraordinary spiritual energy. All these planets are being held and sustained in their particular orbits. So in this way we understand the hidden hand of God is there everywhere. Lord Krishna explains in Gita, Mattah parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya mai sarvamidam protam sutre manigana iva. He gives the same example. He gives the example of a pearl necklace. He says, just as when you look at a pearl necklace, you can understand that there is a string within, although you can't see. In the same way, my dear Arjuna, I am the underlying force and the basis of this whole creation. Although people cannot directly see me, but you should know that behind what can be seen, there is an underlying support, and that is me. So God is He who is underlying the entire creation. He is the underlying support or the basis for everything. So this is the third logical argument we can give. Let us see another argument that people give. They talk of chance. This is a very, very popular theory. There was one very famous philosopher many years ago, French philosopher called Professor Jacques Monod, and he wrote a very popular book called Chance. And his whole philosophy was that everything is happening by chance. There is no God. Whatever the smallest phenomena at the atomic level to the universal level to human affairs, everything is governed by chance. And in this way, this philosophy has become very popular. It is so common to hear people say, when you ask them, who created this world? They'll say it happened by chance. Now here you see an assembly line of so many spare parts, metallic spare parts. Now suppose I told you that all of a sudden by chance, just by putting together various components, automatically this robot has been formed. Nobody has formed it, but just by chance it has come. Will you accept? One great scientist called Fred Hoyle, he did not believe that this universe could have started with a big bang, as the scientists were saying. He said the probability or the likelihood of such a thing happening, that the whole universe has been created just by a big bang, and that all the wonderful ordered and harmonious states that we see around us are the result of a big explosion, he said the idea is so ridiculous. It is like saying that a huge cyclone has blown through a junkyard and lo and behold left behind in its wake a wonderful perfect jumbo jet. Now is it possible that when a cyclone blows through a junkyard, suddenly by chance all the spare parts come together, get joined, welded together perfectly and you form a jumbo jet? No. He said such is the likelihood of the universe being formed by chance. So this is a very wrong theory that is being propagated. Have you ever seen a complicated machine which came by chance and which has no purpose? Any machine, computer, building, even a pen, pencil, even a chapati for that matter, has a maker. Logically, therefore, the far more complex and awesome universe must have a super intelligent designer and producer. It is simply logical. It is just common sense. It is amazing how people are not able to get such a simple point. There is so much amazing order in the universe. The level of the atom, so much order. At the genetic level, at the molecular level, at the cosmic level, so much wonderful harmony and order is there by God's order. The very word cosmos means an orderly, harmonious, systematic universe. So truly this universe is very amazing. But do you know what is more amazing than this amazing universe? What is more amazing than this amazing universe is that there are people who say that this amazing universe happened by chance. That is the most amazing thing. In spite of seeing all this wonderful harmony, we still put forward and these arguments, and people accept us as being very scientific, as being very learned and very philosophical. This is the tragedy of the modern times. Let us understand what is this concept they call chance. Suppose somebody is tossing a coin. So you may argue, the chance of this coin turning up heads is how much? Half, 50%. Now please tell me, suppose the coin turns up heads. What will you say? What is the cause of the coin turning up heads? What is the cause? Is it chance? Is chance the cause of the coin turning up heads or tails? Chance is not the cause. The cause is something quite different. That coin turning up heads or tails depends on the force with which you throw up the coin. It depends on the force of gravity, on the wind, on the air resistance, and so many other physical factors and forces that are acting. If you were able to compute all these things, you could understand whether and predict exactly whether it will be heads or tails. But since we do not have such fine detailed understanding, neither we are interested to go into such a small thing, it is too insignificant for us to do. Therefore we accept, okay, it just happened. But chance is not a cause. Chance is simply a prediction of the likelihood of something happening in a certain way, and that prediction we make on the basis of the experience of observing the same phenomena many times in the past. When I toss a coin 1,000 times, roughly I may get 500 heads and 500 tails. So I say, when I have tossed the coins a large number of times, therefore I can analyze it in such a large sample. The next time I toss a coin for the 1,001st time, I can hazard a guess that the likelihood of the coin turning up heads is 50% or half. So how can you apply this concept to the universe? Has anybody observed the universe being created for 1,000 times? No, scientists have not observed it. Number two, when you say the universe came by chance, you should have said it before the universe was created, not after. Like we talked about chance before we tossed the coin. After the coin is tossed and you are seeing that it is heads or tails, then you cannot say. So in this way, because the common man does not understand the significance of various terms that are used, they are misled into believing all these things. The fact, however, is that nothing happens by chance. Chance is simply an expression of our ignorance for the cause of something. When I don't know what is the cause of something, I say it is chance. Another proof, logically. So we have so far seen so many proofs, here is one more. You see, the urge or the desire to understand God, to know God, to worship God is very natural. It is a natural fundamental urge in all human beings, in fact in all living beings. Because we do not know God, so therefore we worship cinema stars, sports stars, we will worship political leaders, and we see in so many places. In Tamil Nadu, I was told when I went recently, there is a temple, several temples to some political leaders, not only those who have died, but even existing one current leader, she has in her name, she has her murti, there is a temple and one person is doing arati 5 times a day. So people want to worship something. If they don't worship God or something, they will put up some photos of some cinema stars or sports stars in their room. Whole day they will look at it. So the desire to worship something is there, innate, fundamental to all human beings, to all living beings actually. But because they do not know God, so that tendency, that propensity to worship is channelized or directed towards other things. Now, nature is perfect and complete within itself. For every positive, there is a negative. For every negative, there is a positive. For every urge in nature, there is a fulfillment. If there is hunger in nature, it means that nature will also provide the food to fulfill that urge. If there is thirst in nature, it means that nature will also provide the water that can quench that thirst and fulfill that need. So whenever there is an urge for something, it means logically, naturally, by observing the world around us, empirically, that the fulfillment for that urge must also exist in nature. So if the urge for God is there, logically it means that God is also existing. That God is there, He exists. So here is a plate of food. When you look at the food, this arrangement has been made by nature because there is hunger. So where there is hunger, that God exists, and all people are moving on the path towards God. Srila Prabhupada, the founder Acharya of ISKCON, said, everyone is looking for God. The only difference is some people know it and some don't. Even the atheistic people are looking for God, but they themselves do not know it. They are looking for happiness. They are looking for love. They are looking for peace. But these things can be found only in God, nowhere else. Because they do not superficially, because they do not accept the existence of God, they are trying to find this happiness, love and so on in the things and people of this world. And therefore they are always doomed to failure. But the point is that the fact that they are looking for happiness and love means that they are looking for God. Because these things exist only in God and in no one else. So everyone is moving on the path towards God. Here you see, there are devotees coming. And here is this gentleman. He has understood, yes, I have to go towards God. This is my pathway back to the spiritual world. And I should go to the company of the devotees of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada one time said, that in the West, people are very far away from God because they are very materialistic. But in spite of all that materialistic advancement, they are not happy. Therefore, they are turning towards God. So although they are far away from God, they are moving towards God. Therefore, you see many Westerners coming to India and taking up Eastern religions. On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada said, Indians are very close to God because they are born in such a culture, but they are looking westward, so they are moving away from God. So this is the difference. The path is one, but one person is moving towards, one section of people are moving towards God, the other section is moving away from God. So in India, we are very fortunate that we have been born in an environment where we are very close to God. Now we should not go further away from God, rather we should try to go as close as possible to God. But when it comes of going close to God, the question arises, who is God? What is God? There are many people who deny the existence of God, but there are some people who somewhat accept God, who have some kind of conception of God, but there is much confusion. Everybody has his own opinion. Someone says God is light. Someone says God is a force. Someone says God is everything. Someone says you and I all are God. There was one philosopher. There are so many atheistic philosophers that think in this way, they come to conclusions. He said God is dead. That was his philosophy. Of course, it so happens that this philosopher is now dead and God is very much alive. One time there was a small joke that I read. There was a graffiti. Do you know what is graffiti? People like to scribble things on the walls, isn't it? Many people like to write all kinds of things on the wall. It may be a political slogan or it may be anything. So one young man who thought that he was very intelligent, he wrote there, God is dead. And he signed his name below, John, to say that, well, John has said that God is dead, because that young man's name was John. And very soon, below that, when this young man was passing by again, he saw another graffiti there, John is dead, signed God. So anyway, all these false ideas are coming up. So many ideas people have. So let us clearly try to understand, in the midst of all this confusion and chaos, what exactly is God? How do we try to understand what God is? Therefore, we need to see the definition of God. If we say God consciousness or spiritual science, spiritual life is a science, then we must define our things very clearly. So what is the definition of God? So many definitions are possible, and all of them are correct. So let us take the first definition. God is the source of everything. This is the first and most important definition. The source of everything means that everything comes from Him. And He has no origin Himself. He is not only the creator of everything, but He is also the maintainer, and He is also the destroyer of everything. He Himself has no source other than Himself. In the Ishopanishad, it is said, Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. It is said that God is He who is complete and perfect in all respects. And there are innumerable emanations from Him. Emanation means that which comes from Him. There are many, many things that come from God. And those things which come from God are also complete and perfect. For example, this universe has come from God. So according to this verse, not only is God perfect and complete, but because this universe is coming from God, this universe is also perfect and complete. And within this universe also, even our body is perfect and complete. The whole ecosystem is perfect and complete. An ant's body is perfect and complete. An atom is perfect and complete. So innumerable things are emanating from God constantly. But still, He remains perfect. He remains complete. Suppose I have 100 rupees with me. Of course I do not. This is just an example. If I have 100 rupees with me and you take away 80 rupees from me, then I will be left with something less than 100. I will be left only with 20 rupees. Which means that if you take something I have, then I am left with something much lesser. But with God it is not like that, because He is infinite. Any number of universes, innumerable universes are coming from Him. His energies are unlimited. In spite of all the universes and so many creations coming out of Him, He does not diminish. Even though He is a source of everything, He remains Himself. He does not diminish in any way. This is a very, very important point. So this is the first definition, that God is the source of everything. The second definition of God is that He is a supreme controller of everything. We are all here controlled by material nature. Nature has laws, and we are under the tight grip of nature. Nobody can say that I will escape the laws of nature. In order to counteract the laws of nature, our technology has to put in so much effort. To counteract the law of gravity, we have to put so much energy. The aeroplane needs fuel. Such a big technology goes behind it. But any time some little problem somewhere in the plane will come crashing to the ground. So we are all under the tight grip of nature. But nature is under the tight grip of God. Because He controls everything and everyone. But He is not controlled by anyone. We are all here in this world trying to be controllers. But we are only imitation controllers. We are tiny imitation controllers. The next point is that God is not only the supreme controller and the source of everything, but He is also the supreme proprietor of everything. He is the owner of everything. He owns everything because everything comes from Him and everything is controlled by Him. That is the meaning of real proprietorship. If I have a house, I have given it to some tenant to use, and the tenant is not giving it back to me. Of course, now the laws are changing. But if the tenant is not giving it back to me, then my ownership of that house is only a slip of paper. It has no practical value for me. Just namesake, I am the owner. But actually speaking, somebody else is owning it. Even though on paper I own it. So, simply saying that I am the owner is not sufficient. I must have control over that house also. So real ownership means control. So God has perfect control over everything in His creation. Therefore, He is really the proprietor. And because He is really the proprietor, He is also the supreme and in fact the only enjoyer. No one can enjoy something that is not his property or her property. I cannot come to your house and without your permission take your car or open your fridge and eat all your wonderful ice creams inside. I have to take your permission because it is your property. So similarly, this is all God's property. And therefore, He and He alone has the right to enjoy this property. But man is sinful. He does not even say, please, to God, let me use your things. He does not accept the proprietorship of God. He imagines that He is the owner, the proprietor, the controller, the enjoyer of everything. And that is why he suffers the sinful reactions to that. And the reason for suffering in this world is exactly this. Apart from being the supreme enjoyer, God is also one who is a supreme knower. He is omniscient. Omniscient means one who knows everything. He knows past, present and future. If He didn't know everything, He could not be God. Even if there is one thing that God does not know, then He cannot be God. God's knowledge is perfect. His strength is perfect. Everything about God is perfect and complete. So now, judging by these standards, try to estimate or understand whether any so-called avatar of this world today is really God or not. In India, practically in every second lane, we have one God. People who will say, I am God, I am new avatar. So many so-called avatars here. But we should try to understand from the scripture. So therefore, having understood what some basic definitions of God are, let us now try to see, who is this God? Does God have a name? Does he have a form? Is he a person? What does he look like? Here you see in this drawing, at the bottom, you will see Arjuna is praying, Krishna is raising his hands and showing his own Virat Roop, his universal form. Krishna is declaring to Arjuna that he himself is God. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the song of God, Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattah sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanvitah. My dear Arjuna, I am the source of everything. All the material worlds, all the spiritual worlds, everything emanates from me. And those intelligent people who understand this fact well, they worship me with great love and devotion. In this way, Lord Krishna declares himself many, many times in the Bhagavad Gita. With his own lotus mouth, he declares that I am God. And not only that, elsewhere also he gives the same example that we have given earlier. Mattaha parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya mai sarvamidam protam sutre maniganaiva. The example of the pearl necklace, as we saw earlier. When Krishna says, Mattaha parataram na anyat, beyond me there is no truth. I am the supreme absolute truth. No one is superior to me, O Arjuna. Everything rests upon me as pearls are strung on a necklace. So in this way, Krishna very clearly declares, who is God? Not only Krishna, even Arjun. When Arjun hears the Bhagavad Gita from Krishna, he understands, yes, this is the truth. Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, Pavitram, Paramam Bhavan, Purusham, Shashvatam, Divyam, Adideva, Majam, Vibhum, Ahustvam, Rishayha, Sarve, Devarshir, Naradas, Tatha, Asito, Devalo, Vyasaha, Swayam, Chaiva, Bravishime. Arjuna says, my dear Krishna, you are Param Brahma. You are the Supreme Absolute Truth. You are Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, you are the Supreme Abode. You are Pavitram, you are the most pure, Uttamam, the most supreme pure object in this whole creation. And you are actually the Adi Purusha, the original personality in this creation. You are the origin of everything. So Arjuna says, not only I am saying, my dear Krishna, but even great sages like Narada, Asita, Devala, Vyasa, in history, all these great sages have also declared you to be God. Ahustvam Rishayah Sarve, all the rishis. What are the names of these rishis? Asitaha, Devala, Vyasaha. All these great sages have also declared that you are God. And Swayam cha eva bravishime. And now you yourself are declaring, my dear Krishna. So this is a very important verse because somebody may argue, well, Krishna is saying he is God because how can we believe that? If somebody says he is God, he is saying it himself, somebody else should say it. Then if we say, well, Arjun says it, we say, well, Arjun is his friend, so he is saying. So Arjun is saying, well, not only me, not only Krishna, but even all the great saints in history are saying. So at least we should believe the saints. If we do not believe Krishna, we do not believe Krishna's friend Arjuna, At least we should believe great saints like Narad and others who have clearly stated that Lord Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. It is Krishna alone who is the supreme proprietor of everything. In the Bhagavad Gita, he has also explained, Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarvaloka Maheshwaram Suhirdam Sarvabhutanam Gyatma Mam Shantim Richati. He says, I am the only enjoyer, Bhoktaram. All the yajna you do, all the tapasya you do for my pleasure, my dear Arjuna. Because I am the only enjoyer. I am Sarvaloka Maheshwaram. I am the proprietor of all the planets, of all the living beings. Everything is simply my property. In this way, Krishna has declared in the Bhagavad Gita that he is also the supreme proprietor. He is also the father of all and the knower of all, the knower of everything. In the 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna explains, Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtayah sambhavantiyah tasam brahma mahadyonir aham bija pradahpita. My dear Arjuna, please know that there are 84 lakh species of life and I am the seed-giving father of all these species. I am the father of all living beings. Bija pradahpita. Bija pradata. I am the seed-giving father of all species. Lord Krishna says he is the father not just of the Hindus or the Indians, not only of the human beings, he is the father of all living beings. So therefore we can understand that Krishna is truly the Supreme Lord. He is also the knower of everything, omniscient. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani charjuna bhavishyani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashyana. Krishna says, my dear Arjun, I know past, present and future. Samatitani, whatever has actually happened in the past, I know that. Vartamani, whatever is happening now. And bhavishyani, what is going to happen in the future, I know everything. But mam tu veda na kashyana. I know everything, I know everyone, but no one knows me, because I am the Supreme Lord. In this way, Krishna has very clearly established that he is the Lord of all. So then the question arises, is there one God or are there many gods? In India, this is a matter of great confusion, especially in the Hindu society. The philosophy or the idea of pantheism is very common. Pantheism is the idea that there are many gods. So this is a very, very important question for all of us. Is God one or are there many gods? And before we go into this most interesting puzzle, we will get you mentally prepared with a refreshing drink. So take a 5-minute break. You will also be served while sitting in your own place. Those of you who wish to get up to stretch your legs, you are welcome to do so. Those of you who wish to remain seated, you please sit. Devotees will come and serve you some nice refreshing drink. You can relax and after 5 minutes, we will start the presentation again on this very interesting topic. Thank you very much.